Monkey, do you ever say anything encouraging?
I encourage you not to die.
Hello and welcome to episode 128 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Chris Pachko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
So this week, we have a hot topic for you and then a big review of Kubo and the Two Strings. But first for our hot topic, which we're going to issue a spoiler alert for this. It has something to do with Spider-Man Homecoming and it has something to do with a certain character reveal. So if you'd rather go into the movie knowing nothing about the characters, please skip 5 minutes ahead and you will avoid all Spider-Man Homecoming spoilers. So that's your last warning. Let's get into it. Angie, you're hosting this section.
All right, so the big rumor that came out about Spider-Man Homecoming this week is the reveal of who Zendaya is playing. We've known for a long time that she's going to play the female lead. They have been calling her character Michelle, but according to rumors that have been circulating this week, she's actually playing Mary Jane Watson, the character played by Kirsten Dunst in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies. And, you know, as that suggests, this is, quote-unquote non-traditional casting because she's usually portrayed as, like, a red-headed white woman in the comics, so there's been a little bit of blowback about that.
Yeah, it seems that Twitter in particular is really angry about the whole, like, but Mary Jane has red hair thing, which, I don't know, man. If that's what you think is the key part of the Mary Jane Watson character, then why are we even having her in a movie? If, like, her sheer iconography is that she has red hair, that's not what people are pissed about. What people are pissed about is that they think of Mary Jane as a white girl with red hair who is typically scantily clad in a lot of, like, the more popular versions of her in the comics or, like, wearing super snug-fitting clothing. So to me, this is a complaint about fapping, where this does not meet the ideal of what these guys had in mind. And I just don't care about your boners. Like, I honestly just wish that was, like, a gif I could put out, just be like, I don't care about your boner, I don't care about your boner.
I think those gifs exist, but I will say that, I agree with you, and the thing is, like, this is actually not that different from, I mean, it is different because there's a racial component, but it is of the same, cut from the same cloth as the kind of conversation that surrounded Shailene Woodley getting cast in this role for Amazing Spider-Man 2 a few years ago. Her roles ended up getting cut, so it ended up not really being relevant to much of anything. But a lot of the really mean comments I saw around that, a lot of the negativity around it, wasn't that she's not a good actress, because she's a great actress, but that people didn't think she was hot enough. And I think it's because the character in the comics, like, she's kind of set up as, like, a figure of fantasy, almost, like, where, like, you know, she's like this, like, she's literally like a supermodel who's super into this geeky dude who is, like, the character, you know, and Peter Parker, the geek, is the guy you're supposed to identify with. So I guess because of that, a lot of people have this weird ownership of her where they think that, you know, to them, she is absolutely about their boners.
I guess. But even, I mean, I don't, like, Zendaya is a beautiful girl, and I don't want to insinuate that she's not in any way, shape, or form. She's gorgeous. But, like, there should be more to Mary Jane than what color her hair is. And I know we have these same kind of petty arguments with, like, you know, James Bond. It was like, we can't have a blonde James Bond. And even with Katniss, people were pissed because, like, they didn't think that Jennifer Lawrence was the right body type or the right skin color, and they didn't think that, what's-his-face, Josh...
Well, do you remember the crazy thing about the orange backpack? How everyone was freaking out. I just remember that one thing. Maybe I just followed Hunger Games too closely. She just grabs an orange backpack when she's in the cornucopia, and it was, like, such a big deal at the beginning when they released an image that she didn't have her orange backpack, and I was just... Because I wrote a lot about Hunger Games, the comments were just filled with stuff like that. In general, though, I can't care about this story because I'm precious about certain things, and you're going to run into this kind of issue anytime you have something based on source material. Hint, Hollywood, make some original movies. Anytime something is based on something that already exists, someone is going to feel something over something being changed. But it doesn't really matter. As long as it suits the story, it suits the medium. I mean, really, who cares?
I mean, I agree with you there about a lot of what you just said, but I also do think that it's kind of, it is important to me that, you know, Zendaya, who is a black girl, got cast in this role, because, like we were just talking about, Mary Jane is supposed to be this, like, ideally gorgeous girl, and it's always been a white girl, and this time it gets to be a black girl.
Oh, no, I didn't mean who cares. Like, I don't think it's great that she was cast in this role and they're doing something different. I just meant, like, who cares about people freaking out that it's not exactly the same?
Yeah,
like, what is
that's a good point.
What is keeping in line with the source material even matter if we wind up in, with a great movie with great characters in the end? It doesn't matter.
My thing is also just, I think part of the joy of an adaptation is that you get to see a different version of the story. Like, if you want exactly what's in a comic book, read the goddamn comic book. Like, I mean, for me, like, think about Civil War. They did the Civil War comic book series, then they did the movie. They're very different things that tell a similar story, and I'm grateful for that because then we get both. I want more. I want more of these stories. I want more things that are going to surprise me. I like Zendaya's attitude. I like her energy. I'm excited about, like, her in this role. And yeah, I think it's fucking rad because instead of looking at the same, like, dippy blonde ingenues that we keep looking at for every fucking movie, they looked outside that box and picked somebody who could potentially be really interesting and great. And we haven't seen any footage of this yet, so I don't see any reason to get pissed off about it.
I saw a little bit of footage at Comic-Con. We should wrap up, but I want to say a couple things really quick. One is that Zendaya is not she's not the end of this. Like, they're like, Spider-Man Homecoming actually has a surprisingly diverse cast. For example, Flash Thompson, who is also a white guy in the comics, he is being played by Tony Revolori this time, who is Guatemalan. So I think that, you know, it's not just about them, like, race-bending Zendaya. Like, it's actually, they've been making a concerted effort to make this a really diverse cast.
And Abraham Atta's in it from Beasts of No Nation, which just blows my mind.
It has a very, if you look at the cast, it's got lots of people of all, you know, ethnicities, which is fantastic. But really quick before we wrap up, I guess the thing that I'm more worried about, more than Zendaya's casting or really anyone's, is the fact that they're trying so hard to keep it a secret. I mean, we'll see how that plays out in the movie and why it's such a secret, but I don't know. I'm getting shades of Khan and I'm not, you know, in Star Trek.
And you mean like Khan?
Yeah. But yeah, so in sum, it sounds like we're all kind of just like, that's cool. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah, let's hope it's not the worst kept secret because it just seems like a lot of smoke and mirrors for what would be a really minor reveal, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's move on to our review.
Yeah, that's a wrap on our Hot Topic section. Now we're going to move over to our big review, which is of Laika's latest, Kubo and the Two Strings. I am introducing that one. The IMDb synopsis reads, a young boy named Kubo must locate a magical suit of armor worn by his late father in order to defeat a vengeful spirit from the past. Good job, IMDb. That's pretty accurate. I love this movie. I love Laika. Laika can do no wrong in my book. From Coraline all the way up to here, I am so excited about the original, purely original material they are producing. These really original, deep, rich, fun stories. And it's just, like, beautiful, too. This whole movie, I wish we were doing video right now, because the whole movie, I had, like, this really stupid grin on my face, and then I would catch myself, and I'd sit back in my seat and try to close my mouth again, and then 2 minutes later, I'm just, like, in awe again at everything that's happening on this. The big thing that really struck me about Kubo is, often when I react emotionally to a movie, it's because I can connect to a character in a personal way. Whether it's, you know, I'm like that character, I've experienced something that they're going through. I can't connect to Kubo as a person whatsoever. I don't really relate to his journey at all. But at the same time, I was, like, overwhelmed by emotion and the intensity of his journey the entire time, where I walked out after and I was just brimming with feelings, which, you know, it's a hard thing to explain why I felt and what I felt. But when I walk out of a movie just so happy and moved, I can't really ask for much more. So I am a huge, huge fan of this movie.
I want to introduce my point because I feel like it'll lead well into what I suspect Angie's. I know Angie has issues with this.
Angie's making like faces.
I think that you have an inkling of what some of my issues are, but they go beyond what I think that, well, anyway, we'll get to it.
Okay.
I'm nervous.
I like this movie a lot. I think that the animation is fantastic. I think that the way they tell the story is very interesting. I like a lot of the sound design. For instance, Rooney Mara plays a pair of sisters who speak in this kind of echoey, haunting tone that I thought was really great. I think Matthew McConaughey and Charlize Theron are especially strong in the voice work they do because Charlize Theron manages to be, she plays a monkey who is a guardian, who is sort of a mother figure and is very harsh, but is also very loving and like in a very, you know, I mean, it's like if Furiosa was your mom, it'd be intense, but you know she loves you, that kind of thing. And I really bought that. And McConaughey with his like, all right, just keep living, like plays really well into playing an amnesiac beetle samurai. I like a lot about this. I think there's a lot of amazing animation. I think there's a lot of emotion, and I mean any frame of this you could pause and frame on your wall. It's just beautiful, beautiful work, and I like that they did an original story. But I do have an issue with the casting, but maybe someone else wants to talk before we just dive into that.
Can I talk about that? Okay, so, I mean, I want to say, first of all, that this is not my only problem with this movie. This is not why I didn't love this movie. But one of the things that did kind of leave me feeling, like, not so great about it is that it's a movie that is set in Japan, full of Japanese characters, draws really heavily from Japanese culture and Japanese art and Japanese traditions, and is made basically by almost all white people. Like, the cast, like, there are a couple of Japanese actors, including George Takei, but they all have really minor roles. The core cast is all white people. The director is a white guy. Like, as far as I can tell, the writers, the producers, they're all white people. And, I mean, there's something a little bit, like, kind of off-putting about that to me. So, you know, that was definitely one of the problems that I had with it. And I think it's a bullshit excuse to say, like, well, it doesn't, you know, oh, it doesn't matter, or we couldn't find the right people, because Moana is coming out the same fucking year. And that's a movie that's set in the Pacific Islands, so they made a really active effort to fill the cast with that. But that is not my only problem with this movie. Okay, what is this movie about? Like, literally, what is it about? I like Laika. I like, you know, you guys know that I liked Coraline. You guys know that I liked Paranorman. You guys know that I liked Fox Trolls. I expected to really like this. And I walked out being like, I guess it's about, like, memory or something. Like, what has Kubo learned at the end of this? Like, what is this story? Like, I don't know. I didn't hate it, but I just kept being like, what is happening? Like, what am I supposed to be getting out of this?
That's interesting.
I mean, as much as I loved it, I can't answer that question, but that's part of the reason I liked the movie. And it kind of goes back to trying to articulate why the movie made me feel so emotional without me being able to pinpoint a specific thing that I connected to and that made me feel a certain way. It's the same thing actually also with Kubo's abilities. Like, the movie, Kubo has special powers, and they're not defined at all. They never basically just sit you down and explain, Kubo got these abilities from here, he can do this with them, and then he wants to ultimately do this with, like, it doesn't spell it all out. And normally I'm the kind of person who likes everything neat and ordered and logical and explained a very particular way. It's not done that way here whatsoever. And I kind of liked it. I think I got just enough of understanding what he's capable of to appreciate it without being bogged down with a crazy amount of explanation that almost took away from the magic.
I don't know. I understand that. I felt like, for me, the story is ultimately about the idea of loss and how even if something in your life is good or bad, saying goodbye to it is hard. And I thought that was interesting, but I think admittedly that's kind of vague, and I get what you're saying. But it's hard because I feel like this movie is about something very specific, but to go into it is to go into spoilers heavily. And I liked it a lot. I thought it was really beautiful. And to me, it spoke to grief. And I was really compelled by that story and thought it's an interesting way that you can introduce that concept to kids in a way that's not necessarily too scary. And also just in stuff that's super fun. But I want to point out, to circle back to what Angie said, that I tried not to judge, like, when trailers came out about this and I wrote about the trailers for Pajiba, and I was just very excited because I love Laika and I'm very excited about what they do. And I like their style of storytelling. I like the way they do stop motion. I like the way they challenge our concept of animation where in a world so full of CG. I do feel like they dropped the ball in their continued dedication to representation, though, because representation has been something that they've been, whether, like, purposefully or not, trying to go after. Like, you think about, like, Coraline had a female character, and then in Paranorman,
oh, yes,
there was a gay character.
Oh, yes, they've pointed that out many times, and people are like, why is this cast all white? They're like, well, we had Coraline, and that was a female lead, and that was unusual, so, you know.
No, totally. But this is actually why I take them to task for this white cast, is because in the past they've had a gay character who, him being gay, was just part of who he was and was not, like, he didn't need to be a stereotype or whatever. And then in Box Trolls, you had a girl character that liked horror, which meant a lot to me because when I was growing up as a kid, there weren't a lot of girl characters that were allowed to be girly and also, like, gross stuff. And I thought that was really great. And, like, the way they toy with that, I thought was really great. And then they're like, oh, now we're going to do a story set in Japan. And I thought, that's awesome. And then I saw the cast and I was like, I mean, I see George Takei there, but it seems like all your main characters are white people. And I was trying to be open-minded because I thought, I don't know what the story is yet. And then I saw the story, and guys, I can say this without spoilers, there are five main characters and all five of them are voiced by white people. And the thing is, I think Charlize Theron...
They're explicitly Japanese characters, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, they are. Absolutely. Like,
this
I was watching...
just like, oh, it's a fantasy world that's influenced by Asian culture.
It's
like
absolutely
Star Wars,
Japanese.
Even.
Like, it's very thoroughly Japanese. And like, the thing is that you can make the... Like, I think you could make an argument for Theron and McConaughey because I felt like they were like, especially when you know how Leica does stuff, which is that they kind of, when they're testing the animation, they actually pull clips from pre-existing things to put in there and to kind of fill out the voices. And I get that. But Art Parkinson was like Rickon in Game of Thrones. Nobody gives a shit about him. And like Ralph Fiennes barely does anything in this. You don't need Ralph Fiennes for this. Rooney Mara, I like what she did, but again, anybody could do it. So I feel like it's so easy to be like, oh, but we needed, like, I feel like the go-to is you can be like, oh, well, we were really attracted to these people's voices. But then there's also the problem of majority of white people get cast in things. So it automatically unbalances what you're looking at. I don't know. I just feel like they made such an effort to make all the teeny minor characters Japanese American performers that why the fuck not attempt to bring some of that into the main cast?
Okay, I'm not disagreeing with you that the voice cast is good, but I do not give Matthew McConaughey and Charlize Theron's casting a pass just because they're good in this. Like, I mean, it's just like that's not the problem with it. The reason I was unhappy with it wasn't like, oh, Charlize Theron isn't a good enough actress.
No, I get that.
So, I mean, like, I get what you're saying in that, like, oh, you know, despite that, this is good. But, like, I don't agree. I don't agree with giving them a pass on that one because they're good. By the way, and, you know, not that it's here or there, but Rooney Mara was actually, she's the one that, like, if I had to keep one of the white people, it'd be her.
Interesting. Okay.
I was actually, that was one of my favorite things. Well, first, just to, you know, address what you guys are discussing, I cannot make an excuse for that. I understand it, and I agree with it. It didn't stop me from loving the movie. But
yeah, I mean, we all like stuff that's like kind of, you know, icky.
Hashtag problematic, yeah.
Yeah, but just to go back to Rooney Mara, even though I'm a big fan of Leica and I was following the development of the movie and then putting the cast together, I must have just completely missed that she was cast, voice cast in this movie because, you know, in the end, this isn't really a spoiler because I think almost all Leica movies do it, where they reveal who voiced the characters. When they showed the sisters and put Rooney Mara's name there, I was like, oh my god, I can't believe that was her. That was just, it was a really effective voice performance from a famous voice that I should recognize, but I did not. And I really appreciated that. And also, before we do talk about spoilers, please make sure to stay for the beginning of the credits of this movie because they do some really cool stuff that I love that Leica does, and I freaking love that cover song, the Regina Spektor cover song. Oh my god,
she's
I had that in my head
behind
all
the scenes
day
stuff
after
that.
That
you'll want to see. It's really beautiful.
The way they made the Beatles song sound more Asian, yeah, that's great. I'm giving them a hard time, but I do like the cover song. But it was just like, okay, so we also got white people for that. That's great.
No, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought. I mean, like that was the thing. It was like I didn't want to judge the film until I saw it, and then when I saw it, I was like, it's really hard to make the argument that they had to all be white people. I can't follow that. I don't know. And it does disappoint me because, like I said, Leica has been really good at pushing the envelope on representation. And I feel like here they had a really good opportunity to do that in a brilliant way. And they missed it completely. And like you said, we have Mona or Moana. I'm not totally sure how we're pronouncing that coming up.
I think it's Moana.
And like they made an effort to cast people who are appropriate for the characters they're voicing. And it means more. It just, they're going to have an awareness of the history and whatever. And I'm not saying that the performances weren't good. They were. But it's like you could also get good performances from people that would better understand what this story is about. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I agree, but let's move into spoilers because you guys were like, I can't talk about what the movie's about unless we do spoilers, so I can't wait to find out what this movie's
Angie
fucking about.
Angie Hunt, throwing down the gauntlet, ladies and gentlemen. All right, yeah, let's move into spoilers.
So, spoiler alert for Kubo and the Two Strings, we will be talking about spoilers for the rest of this show, so if you don't want to hear spoilers and you haven't seen the movie, tune out now, but do we want to quickly give our recommendations for Kubo? I mean, clearly,
I think you should. See it.
I am rah-rah Kubo. Go see it. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. Angie, do you want to chime in before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate it. There are things to like about it, but I just found it to be disappointing overall. I thought even the visuals, honestly, weren't as good as I have come to expect from them. But let's move into spoilers.
Okay, let's go to spoilers.
All right. Who are
right, so
Angie
here's the thing.
Or Christy? Okay.
When they reveal that Monkey and Beetle are his parents,
Yeah, you mean the reveal that's obvious from, like, the first time you see them? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because of the monkey, like, the face thing, I was like, so that's his mom? So that's his mom? So that's his mom? So that's his dad? It's not subtle, but it's also a kid's movie, so I guess to some degree we can just let that go. I don't know. I thought it was about the idea that, like, you do at some point have to let go of your parents, and I thought it was that. I thought it was talking about grief and about loss, and but then I feel like, I do feel like the last shot is very confusing because it's like, wait, so are they with him? Or is this like, they're always with you in spirit?
Yeah, I think it's one of those like, oh, but they're always with you in spirit kind of things. I don't know. Like, I kind of felt like the movie, like, Kubo doesn't grow at, like, really at all throughout the movie. I don't think he learns anything. He doesn't really face any particular hardship other than that sometimes there are obstacles in the way of him getting this armor. But, like, it's like, you know, for example, like at the end of the movie, his grandfather comes to him and he's like, you know, join us. Like, join our family. But you see no reason why he would even remotely be tempted. So it's not actually a real choice.
And that's a good
point. The movie ends with an old man losing his memories in a movie that's been the whole time like, oh, our memories are who we are. An old man loses his memories and then a bunch of villagers manipulate him into becoming an entirely different person.
Oh, that's a good point.
A good way to end this movie.
That's solid. That's a solid argument. I did like, okay, I do argue that I think that Kubo as a character does grow, because what I thought was interesting is the whole time they're trying to get him this armor and it's supposed to be the idea that he's supposed to take down the Moon King as a warrior, but that's not who he is. So I like that in the end, it was like through a story and through being creative and through this that he did that. I do agree with you now that is sloppy. The ending is sloppy. I still liked it, but this is not the best Leica has done. I still think Box Trolls, Thump on Chest, I think Box Trolls is by far the best. But I liked a lot of this.
Box Trolls is still my favorite.
Me too. It's the lowest rated on Rotten Tomatoes of their movies. How stupid is that? Everyone is terrible but us.
Great critique.
But yeah, no, I get your point. I do think that, yeah.
I kind of gave the thing with his grandfather not necessarily a pass, but I liked that to a degree. It was like him getting another chance, you know? Like he had,
like, grandfather
veered,
or Kubo?
The grandfather. He had
except it's
done,
not. He just, it's not a choice. They emptied him of his memories and manipulated him into being a different person.
That's a very good point.
It's not a choice. It's not something
you're just
for.
The Debbie Downer of this episode. Every time I say something
that's an
positive,
interesting
it's
point,
like,
because it's the idea of using a story to, like, heal him, but it doesn't heal him. It just lies about who he is. I don't know. I mean, because it's supposed to be something about, like, now he can actually see humanity, and I get that, but I feel like how rushed it is that it doesn't sell that argument very well.
Oh, yeah. The thing about seeing humanity, also, the whole thing is, like, you need to have eyes so you can connect. I'm like, literally, what about blind people? Like, what are we doing here?
Blind people aren't humans, Angie. If Kubo has taught us anything,
and then I'm like, what about people who have amnesia or are senile or have Alzheimer's or something? Like, are they not people anymore because they don't have their memories?
Wow.
Like, and is it okay to, like, manipulate them into becoming different people because you didn't like the people that they used to be? Like, what is this movie?
I don't have a good defense about this, and I'm sorry.
Well,
no, that's,
don't let Angie write the Kubo and the Two Strings sequel because it's going to be a really dark and twisted exploration of people.
I would
who
argue this
can't
is already pretty
things.
Fucking dark and twisted because it's like, oh, you're blind boy. And you have Alzheimer's, you're basically not a person, and we're allowed to manipulate you into doing whatever you want. So,
wow, huh? Yeah, and it's like, just because he doesn't remember doing horrible things, does that mean that he's, like, not, I don't know, responsible for them anymore? Like, I guess it's up to Kubo to forgive his grandfather
about
his parents and taking his eye, but.
Well, that's what the movie suggests at the end, is that he can live happily ever after with the community.
Which is, again, a thing he never wanted to do. So it's actually not a happy ending for him. It's a very sad
ending. It is a little weird that you have more sympathy for, like, the bad guy that was trying to, like, destroy humanity than you. Oh, wait, no, that's on brand for Angie.
It's actually not even that I think he's a good, like, I don't like him, like, he's like Voldemort, but I just feel like the movie throughout the entire movie, it's just like, it's about, like, oh, memories and, like, how they make you who you are, and, like, having your, and, like, being in control of your story makes you who you are, like, that's, like, what the movie keeps saying over and over.
Right.
So I think that by making that the ending, it basically just undercuts its own message, which, you know, insofar as there even is a message, because, again, I still don't really know what this movie's trying to tell me. But I think it has something to do with how your memories make you who you are. So I just feel like it's a really weird and twisted ending and a kind of a perversion of what I think they are trying to say.
That's actually a very good point. I don't know. Angie wins on that. I don't know. That's true. That's a very good point.
Angie's doing a dance right now that you can't see. Okay.
It's the happiest Debbie Downer dance ever.
Yeah, really.
I'm sorry. I hope that next week, whatever we review, I do hope it's something where I get to sympathize with the heroes and not root for the villains or anything. I don't set out to do this, guys.
This review was like, if you could picture Angie like stepping all over my hopes and dreams and just bursting my bubble. That's exactly what the end of this episode just was. Oh.
I have become the monster.
Well, but you made your own story, so that's a success. That's a win.
Yeah, I guess, do we want to wrap there?
Yeah.
Alright, well.
Yeah, that was interesting. You gotta give us that.
Yeah. Okay. So I still think we should all go see the movie and just forget everything Angie just said. does anyone else want to put in some final thoughts?
I think it's really beautiful. I think kids will like it. But yeah, Angie has some really strong arguments against the story that I think make a total lot of sense. And I do think that, you know, I hope Laika strives for better all around next time. I like this movie a lot. I think they can do better.
Angie, would you recommend people see this?
As I said before, I mean, it's fine. Like, I feel like because I had a different opinion of it than you guys, my more negative opinions came out more. I actually didn't hate it. It is kind of slow. But you know, it's cute. Like Rooney Mara's fantastic. Matthew McConaughey's funny. And they were like, we need a Voldemort type character. Let's just cast Voldemort. So Ralph Fiennes is in it. So yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's a wrap on episode 128 of Popcorn and Prosecco. I am so rattled at this point. You guys know where to find us on iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate, and comment. We would love if you could do that. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. Please like us on Facebook at Popcorn Prosecco. We have our Twitter handle, Popcorn Prosecco. And then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, you want to take it first?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the web. You can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com. And I just realized that my Twitter page has the background of the villain from Rogue One, so I'm really just not helping my own case at all here. I'm sorry.
And your avatar is Brittany from Daria.
She's not like, a villain?
She's a little... She's an antagonist, to be sure. Not intentionally, maybe. But neither are the Mudos, I guess, so back to Godzilla. Oh God.
Are we going back there? You know what I have to say to that? Chappie. You can find me at P. Nemiroff on Twitter and Instagram, and I write for Collider.com, and I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
If you must blink, do it now.